Wait. I thought Super Summer was over. Why are we talking about a Supergirl comic book? We're talking about Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are here to do a little comic catch-up as we catch up on some comic books that one or both of us has missed out over the past few years. The whole idea behind this is that we're reading stuff that's kind of new-ish, maybe not brand new, but new-ish, that we've just kind of been too busy to catch up on, and we're just going to take a time for the next few weeks to pause and go and read some stuff. But my name is Drew, and I need my co-host with the mo-host, the boots to my cape, Miles. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I am excited. You know, I feel like we do, like, and I don't know why I'm saying this, you know, on air as opposed to, you know, before we record. I do feel like we probably need to be a little bit more attentive to the comic book world in our podcasting ventures.
It's been a lot of TV shows lately
and movies and stuff,
and movies.
We've gotten better this year. We did some gaming stuff, and we've definitely been better about variety this year, but I feel like we just do, like, we do one comic thing per year, and that's typically enough. And we used to do a lot more, so I feel like we should probably, like, that's something we should work on, I think, because I mean, I miss reading comics.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading way more comics a few years ago than I am right now. I'm still subscribed to a lot of comics on
Same. Was
Comixology that are just piling up, that,
yeah,
including one we might talk about in the next few weeks. But this week, we are talking about Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. And we chose this because this book is ran from 2021 to 2022. Very, very new-ish. This also, consequently, conveniently, happens to be the inspiration and largely source material for the upcoming Supergirl movie coming out next year. The book itself, written by a guy that's all over comic books right now, whether you want him to or not, Tom King, with art by, and I apologize for mispronouncing this if I do, I believe she's from Brazil, Bilkis Evely, which I just want to talk about the art for a second before we get into the actual story of this. This art rules. It's so, so good. And like,
It is. You know, I was saying before we recorded that, like, I love this art, even though I don't want it to be, like, permanent Supergirl art, you know, as far as an ongoing, but it is the perfect fit for this story. Gives me kind of a Scott McCloud vibe in some ways.
Like, the way I'm trying to describe it, like, bold pastels, is that a thing?
Oh, the coloring is excellent.
Is so, so good, and the style itself reads as both high fantasy but also like classic golden age superhero.
It honestly, every single page felt like I was reading the Sunday edition of the weekly comics, and yeah, you'd have that one big page of like Prince Valiant or the Phantom or something like that, and there was all this detail everywhere. Matt Lopez is the colorist who deserves a lot of credit for bringing the mood of this book to life. But I really love a lot of the choices here because, like, for example, like, Supergirl looks a little bit different than what we have been used to, even with the skirt style. This style feels much more akin to the kind of 80s Supergirl style. And it, I don't know, there is just the way that she did her clothing just felt very unique. It wasn't kind of a skin tight situation. It felt like clothes that she actually wore.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a a good attention to detail with everyone's hair that I really appreciated.
Supergirl's hair especially is just, it's so classic, like 1950s, but like just,
yeah,
it's perfect.
It does. I mean, this book does feel kind of like, hey, and this is one of the things I loved about some parts of the 90s is there was this attitude amongst, especially the year one, year of annuals in 1993, of doing these kind of classic origin stories with modern storytelling beats. And the one obviously I read was Robin Annual One, which did not tell the story of Tim Drake, but actually gave a very modern retelling of Dick Grayson's origin story, but with like all of the meat and potatoes you would get in a 60-page like actual origin of Dick Grayson, because not the stuff that you've been told or you saw in a, you know, 2-panel flashback in an older comic. This actually goes into everything, which, you know, would become a part of like, you know, the Batman the Animated Series. And this really does feel like in line with that. And it's something that I don't think is done enough of, hey, let's take a look back at things that really work, that we really like from this era. Mike Alred does that a lot. He did that with his Silver Surfer and his Superman books. He's always got that classic 50s style. For those who don't know, he's the artist that does Madman, which was the inspiration of like Freakazoid and stuff. And
the inspiration of
exactly. Yeah, I know. They stole that from him outright.
And he is not happy about it.
And never has been. And I don't blame him one bit.
Which I've never read Madman. I should probably should.
Oh, it's good. It's very good. And
it's just one I never found my way to.
Maybe. Well, you know what? I'm gonna call the shot right now, because I just, you know, ran my mouth about wanting to do something comics. At some point, we need to do like a classic indie comics month of like the old indie comics from the 90s that like kind of got on the map. Like Madman and Madman's Flaming Carrot or
Scud's
something like that.
Assassin.
Yeah, Milk and Cheese, whatever. Like, just there's a bunch of stuff out there that I don't think we've covered, and a lot of it has kind of been forgotten. Madman not so much, because Mike Alred has remained pretty relevant and does consistent. He's doing a Batman book now, I think.
Yeah, he had done that great Animal Man book in the New 52.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. But yeah, the style of this book, you're right. It kind of, you've got this kind of classic science fiction, like a pulp fiction style. It's very pulpy. But then we're going to insert, you know, a major character who is part of one of the most famous superhero franchises of all time in Supergirl.
Yeah.
And tell a story that you would don't expect.
And I will say, it definitely draws a lot of inspiration from True Grit. You know, somebody
100%.
Like, maybe not beat for beat necessarily, but pretty close.
And knowing who wrote it, that does not surprise me one bit.
But to get into the actual story itself, it opens, and this is the fun thing about this, is that it the whole thing reads as someone recounting the events of their younger days in some form of written word. My father, whose name I will not record here, for I do not wish it learned, did not die a dignified or honorable death. A criminal and a thief and a liar who, at the time, identified himself as Krim and claimed the Yellow Hills as his place of origin, stabbed him through with a coppice blade. Like, and it's just told in this very, like, and we learned that the writer of this and sort of our narrator of the story is, I'm gonna call her Ruthie.
Yeah, that's kind of how I read it in my head.
Her name is Ruthie. I doubt it's Ruthie, but it could be. We'll see how they decide to do that.
That band Gotia.
Yeah, Ruthie, whose father is killed by Krim of the Yellow Hills, and she goes on a quest to. Picks up the sword left in her dead father's chest and picks up a sword to go and avenge him any way she can, because he didn't deserve to die like that, and goes to a local tavern on her planet, because this is a planet that we see in the very opening moments is a big giant red sun in the background, as she ends up trying to hire somebody who then knocks her down and steals the sword and says he'll take care of it, but she don't really believe that, only to run into none other than Kara Danvers, Kara Zor-El. They don't really call her anything in this book other than the one and only Supergirl.
Yes.
Who has consequently come to this red planet because it's her 21st birthday and she can't get drunk on Earth. So she goes all the way out to this backwater red sunned planet in order to get drunk on her birthday, which is such a freaking choice. And then the story goes on. This book goes a lot of places, Miles.
It does. One of the things that is interesting, we should note that while this is, yes, one of the main inspirations for the upcoming Supergirl movie, it is not the only one, and I would imagine it is going to use several beats and characters, but I don't think it's going to be a one-for-one story because Lobo was also involved in that movie. I feel like this will be an inspiration in the same way that All-Star Superman was an inspiration for James Gunn's Superman. And
wow. You almost screwed up there, dog.
Yeah. I feel like, because all these major characters, you need to have a movie where they can shine. That's what made the initial Marvel Universe great, and it's what the Zack Snyder and company failed to do the first route, is just like make several movies about these characters that matter. Because I don't care if they meet up if I don't like the character.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciate that this entire vibe is so distinctly different from James Gunn's Superman story or All-Star Superman. It is very much Kara's story, because it doesn't even feel like a Superman book. It hardly feels like a superhero story. And if you took off her cape and outfit, like, it would just be like a really cool pulp science fiction story that has a very, very big Western inspiration.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I appreciate this because it kind of goes back to the pulpy roots of comics. Before they became the corporate juggernaut machines that they are, they used to be dedicated to just telling weird stories. And this is a weird story.
This is a weird story that goes into... So we're going to go through a lot of the larger beats of this, and spoilers abound for this book. Honestly, you should go
read it. We can't talk about it without spoiling it, really.
Yeah, you should go read it because it's really freaking good. I love this book. It's the second time I've gone through it. I'm already planning a third read, especially before the new movie comes out next year. But just to start off with, you have a depowered Supergirl getting involved in saving somebody's life and getting shot in the chest with arrows.
Immediately getting shot in the chest.
But still somehow winning the fight because she's Supergirl.
They also shoot Crypto.
But they shoot Crypto with a poison arrow.
Which, if they do that on screen,
they're gonna.
I think people will riot. Because James Gunn already changed the scene in Superman because of audience reaction to violence upon Crypto.
Oh, we did? What scene did they change?
There's a scene that they took out.
We're not a spoiler cast for Superman right now.
But it didn't happen in the movie.
Okay.
There's a scene where the Ultraman character, like, full-on gut punches Crypto and slams him to the floor. And test audiences did not like that at all. And James Gunn went back to it and was like, yeah, that's probably a little much, and took it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one scene I know they changed in the trailer is in one of the first trailers when the guy throws the can at the back of Superman's head. He blinks when it hits his head, And they and they edited in a later trailer to where he doesn't blink at all.
Yeah, which no I mean, some people made a big deal about it. I'm like, no, that I like this choice.
So anyway, we have so this story starts with Ruthie trying to hire somebody to bring justice to Krim of the Yellow Hills, which Supergirl volunteers to do because well, she tries to say no, but then she follows Ruthie to her ship where Supergirl can't fly because it's a red sun planet and she doesn't have powers. While she and Ruthie are talking and Ruthie is kind of begging her to help, Krim of the Yellow Hill shows up. He shoots Krypto. He shoots Supergirl, and Krypto has been poisoned, and only Krim of the Yellow Hills has the formula for the poison to save Krypto. So now, and he also runs into Supergirl's ship and it takes off. So now they've got to go and find him to save Krypto. Which
this of course, is, yeah, we go to hell and back with that dog.
Yeah. And this is where I love that most of the second issue is literally just them on different spaceships sitting in passenger compartments.
And it's mostly crazy aliens falling asleep on Ruthie. Yeah.
But what you see in that is you sort of start to see Supergirl like looking out for her and watching her back, but at the same time teaching her stuff. And all of this is told from Ruthie's perspective, but from Ruthie's perspective from what feels like some time in her distant past. Like these are vivid memories that she has that she's kind of writing down in a memoir the entire time, and it's all told in this kind of what feels like a combination of ye olden times language, but also mixed in with like Southern American.
Yeah,
Southern
it feels language. Like a Western. It very much feels like it's a Western.
Yeah. And it just, it works so well. And it really picks up the pace when they get to the first location, which I didn't write it down. I should have written it down.
Maypole,
which I keep thinking about the scenes that they're guaranteed to show and the scenes that they're not going to show in the movie. And I feel like Maypole is definitely one that's getting shown.
Oh, given the current climate, absolutely.
Yeah. so they venture to the town of Maypole that they know that Krim went through. And everybody is so nice on the surface, but the second that you kind of question them on anything, they snap at you, and it's really kind of a weird situation. Feels very and Ruthie comments about like, how could these people be bad? They're just they're so nice and friendly and peach pie. Friendly as peach pie, and they're happy as peach pie. And this is where I also question how they're going to do this, because this Supergirl is a Supergirl that, while not heavily, she curses a lot, and it is great.
I mean, it's pretty heavily. She curses several times each book.
Yeah, she does. And one of my favorites is
she calls Cal a bitch.
Well, she's already done that.
That's right.
But one of my favorites is in this in Maypole, when one of the first people they talk to as they're trying to find out information, they're not getting any real information, and they go outside and again, apologies for cursing on the show. I know Miles doesn't care, but for some reason I do. Anyway,
I want to curse on the show, but Daddy won't let me.
but Supergirl and Ruthie are talking, and and Ruthie's like, how did you know he was lying? How did you know he was lying that entire time? And she basically goes through this whole explanation of, well, I haven't been on this planet long enough to be able to understand the vibe of things and people's heartbeats and perspiration levels and stuff like that. So I didn't really know, but he was an asshole, and assholes are always lying.
Which is a line that I think will 100% make the movie.
I just wonder how they're going to do it in the movie, because Supergirl curses a lot in ways that are more than PG-13. And we say curses, these are all implied words. They're the comic book, like, at symbol.
The symbols. Yeah. So the way I think is that it's going to be a lot of PG-13 cursing. You're going to get one F-bomb, of course. But, like, asshole you can get, you know? And she can say bitch, and she can say, like, she can even get a couple of shits in. But, like, really until, like, she drops the F-bomb, that's not when you're already territory. So I think they're going to navigate that pretty well. Although they could also easily just say, like, oh, yeah, she just doesn't do it as much. Which I would prefer that not being the case.
I think what they'll do is they will have a scene where we see what actually happens, and we will get the actual curse words that are said. And then we will see the scenes from what Ruthie is writing, where she has cleaned up the language. And so it will be
that would be funny once, like, just one time seeing that and her being like, I didn't say that. Yeah. And her being like, no, but I'm not rude, or something like that. Yeah. You know, I do love this version of Kara's, like, sass. She's got a real toot behind her. And that we alluded to something, I think, last week when we mentioned that, you know, Kara has a very different origin story than Clark, and typically always has. But they have updated it more in a way that I find it is honestly the right move, because it further defines her character separate from Clark. She is not just someone with an S and a skirt who has a very similar origin. Heck, I think even in the original Supergirl movie or something, they made her like a journalism major and Clark was her cousin, like, in name only, but like that they were basically having her be like just a girl version of Clark.
Even the Supergirl TV show on CBS/CW worked for Cat Grant's newspaper.
Yeah. Cat Grant's that part station. Made sense to me, because you need a TV show, you need something, you know, around it. And also, like, it very quickly becomes like more about working at the DEO than Catco.
Sure. But one thing I like about it, and we're going to skip ahead a good bit, because I don't want to go through every single story arc in this, but
I do want to talk about her origin, though.
But that's where I'm getting to, because
that's where I was getting to as well.
Yeah, but what this book does is it couches every decision and everything you see Supergirl doing in her particular experience with the destruction of Krypton in a way that I've known that there is a portion there. Sometimes she is shown as being just sent on it at a different time, but getting caught in a wormhole. And sometimes she has been sent and goes to Argo. Is that the city? But what this does is it couches her as someone who was, and they tell this whole story about how she used to look at the trees with the red and blue leaves outside her window. And which, by the way, I'm only just now clocking is the Superman and Supergirl colors. That's just that she has this longing of sitting in her room in her apartment and listening to the rain and looking at the leaves move with the wind. And when Krypton starts its destruction, she's at school and she's sent home from school. And we have this very graphic, not necessarily an image depiction, but in text depiction of the things that she is seeing and the people that she's seeing die and are already dead. Including one in particular that if they show it on screen is going to be a big freaking deal.
Oh, I think
deal.
They will. You talking I about think the, they will, the rocket, too. The rocket crib thing?
The crib, yeah.
Or yeah. The stroller. I absolutely agree. I don't just love that they give us this, because this helps kind of formulate who Kara is. Because Clark has none of these memories. But by making like the actual decision, like not only was she an adult and like, oh, she had to leave Krypton too. The end of Krypton is depicted in a way that they haven't really done before. And they make sure to say, yeah, Krypton's death wasn't just some big explosion that happened at one quick time. This was a slow death of a planet.
Yeah.
And seeing like what, is it Zor-El? Is that her father?
Zor-El.
Zor-El. Seeing Zor-El try to kind of help, you know, keep one city together, and then like hearing the tribulation that Kara goes through by trying to help see this through is harrowing. And then you get through the fact that, oh, and as a result, this radiation has given her mother cancer and is killing her. And I mean, Zor-El's not far behind.
And effectively, this radiation is just kryptonite. Like it's that's what it is. It's the irradiated portions of the ground that they are living on. And how they have all this lead that they encase the entirety of the ground on the planet in lead, and they're okay, except her mother's not, and her mother passes away. And as time goes on, then, because they can't control this floating city in space, it's just kind of flying randomly, and it flies through a meteor shower that destroys the lead shielding that they've created, and therefore the radiation is going to get out and it's going to start killing people again, to the point where that's when we have Zor-El basically like, hey, my weirdo brother sent me the plans to this ship, I'm building one for you.
Yeah, because they just describe him as a frivolous scientist, I think is the word they use.
My frivolous like... brother.
And that's like, well, your brother wasn't wrong, was he?
Yeah, but it's all of that they couched this in that Supergirl has watched her planet and her people die three
and
times.
Die
horribly three times, and she is 14 years old.
I love that's the last sentence of that entire story.
It's
is
beautiful.
She was 14 years old, and it's like mic drop.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The pacing and everything in this, and how all of that comes together for me in all the actions that she takes up to and including the end of the book. Now, before we get to the end of the book, because I know we're going to have a conversation about that, are there any other moments, key bits that you want to talk about?
There's a lot of the beautiful thing about this book, and I think it's the most special thing about the book, is there are books that have a turn or have a kind of delivery to make, a punctuation mark that when you watch it again, you know, you're informed by that, and so you see things differently. Sometimes that works really well if it's a well-earned thing, or if it's sometimes just a twist. You rewatch that movie again with a little bit less of enthusiasm because you're like, okay, this only amounts to the twist. But the beautiful thing about this book is there is a moment that happens at the end that when you reread it, you are you're more informed as a reader, and you see there are very specific subtleties that Kara makes in almost every single issue, and it's almost noted every time as either patience or kindness. And even though we are getting this a sharper version of Supergirl than we are used to, she is not the sweet as apple pie, you know, Kansas farmer. She is someone who has been, you know, hardened by her experience.
She's been through it.
And despite all of that, maintains her kindness. And one of the things I love is, like, you know, after they experience this crappy situation on Maypole, they go after Krem, who has kind of gone up with these, like, the worst kind of space marauders.
The brigands
who are on the most, like, dandy named ship of all time.
Yeah, the Bonnie Prince Charlie.
Bonnie Prince Charlie. And I'm like, what are we doing
That's
here?
That's a pirate ship name, dog. That's a pirate ship name.
It's a space dandy name is what it is. I have no issue with it, except they are just absolutely committing genocide left and right. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's not wonderful. And so you get some, one of the cool moments is that Supergirl gets surprised, attacked with some magic, and ends up on a planet with a green sun. And
this is apparently a planet that existed in a Justice League story at some point. I didn't go back and look it up, but
Because they mentioned that, oh yeah, they got Clark out in 45 minutes and she's there for like 18 hours.
Yeah, because they're just waiting for the sun to go down so that Supergirl can at least have some semblance of her powers to try to escape.
Yeah, I really like that. I feel like the introduction of Comet, the super horse, while cool, I think that plot thread needed a little more flesh and bone on that.
It came kind of out of nowhere, and to the point,
and it finishes the same way.
And it finishes the same way, to the point where when it finishes the way that it finishes, Supergirl tells Ruthie, like, I mean, it was like this, because R.I.P. Comet, but it was like this. But it's complicated.
and
that's all we get, which I don't know. There's a part of me that actually likes that, but there's a part of me that understands that it's not as satisfying of an actual story to hear.
I did not find that satisfying. And honestly, it took away from how interesting it could have been. That was one thing that I thought was, it just really took me out, because it's a cool reveal, but you get nothing.
Well, I mean, the coolest part of that, though, is that you have Comet the Super Horse that she has to outrun another one of these Mordru orbs, or whatever they're called, that are magical, that she can't fight against, that are going to send her probably back to that green sunned planet to kill her. And Comet prevents her from getting hit by the second one. But when they eventually do capture Krem of the Yellow Hills and they have him tied up to this tree on the beach, Comet's there with Ruthie while Kara is going to fight the brigands. And Kara gets almost defeated and all of this, and she's down and they're about to shoot her with a kryptonite bullet. And she's basically having this conversation with Comet from this long distance of, no, don't come help me, I'll be fine. You need to protect her. You need to protect her. You need to protect her. Meanwhile, Ruthie is like, no, you're responding to Supergirl. Go save Supergirl. Go help her. Go save her. Go help her. Go save her. And that's all interesting, with the exception of the fact of that the more interesting story point there is that Ruthie doesn't know the full deal with Comet. She doesn't know what he actually is.
Right.
But she tells this whole story about an animal that she had and she kind of coddled when she was a child, and how at the end of the day, she learned at the end of things that it didn't trust her. And it's sort of this mirror of Ruthie's on the ground with a sword with the person that she hates tied up to a tree. She could kill him at any moment. And technically the only thing stopping her is Comet the Super Horse getting in the way. But Ruthie also breaks that trust in the same way that the animal broke the trust, didn't trust her. Then she is breaking Supergirl's trust the second that Comet steps away. Although we sort of learn at the end of things that something's different, but But then, yeah, what happens to Comet happens to Comet, and it's like, wow, this is just a weird thing. That is very strange.
It felt very throwaway. And the art's
very cool, but I don't really...
The art is awesome, but I feel like without an extra issue or without disrupting Ruthie's narrative, which I think is the reason they called it, is because Ruthie doesn't know the story and wasn't told the story. So therefore, she's like, well, moving on.
Yeah.
So in that, I can forgive it through that aspect, but like, it still annoys me as a reader.
I get it.
But we do come up to, I think, the kind of best part of the entire series, when Ruthie has her prey and she raises the sword to kill him. She's bested him in combat. And
she cut off his fingers. It was
rough. Cut off his fingers. And several times brings the blade up to remove his head from his shoulders. Swings three times. Each time she just can't do it. She can't bring herself to actually kill him. And then you find out that Supergirl is right behind her the entire time, knowing. And the reveal that the entire trek has been to save Ruthie from herself.
God, what a beautiful moment.
That all those little moments of kindness that she spent what seems like may have been like 6 months with this girl.
It is definitely months. They do clock that. But that the whole thing of it was that I want to find the specific line, because it's all about how, you know, it was this and this and this. That basically she was trying to free Ruthie from this life of torment that she has lived through, because she still dreams of Krypton and she still carries this weight of the things that happened to her when she was 14 years old with her. And she wants to do anything she can to prevent this young girl from having to go through that same thing.
It also is a bit of a, what's the word I want to use? Thesis on this new iteration of Supergirl. Because through this, you find out she is every bit of a believer in folks and kindness. In the same way as her cousin, she just has a much more... I don't want to say darkened view, but she definitely has a much more nuanced perspective. And because we see this entire time, she curses, she's got some attitude, she is not afraid to take down some folks. Okay, so she's the darker cousin. She's not. She is just weathered.
But we also see her doing the same things for people, constantly helping. Like that moment when she speed digs 1,000 graves so that they don't have to make a mass grave for people. And up to and including, I scanned your DNA with my X-ray vision and I know which one of these people is your daughter. Let me take you to her. It's just like, God.
Yeah, I was saying last week, to do rough air, I'm not a big fan of Tom King and a lot of his writing. And even though I know he has a couple of like classic minis under his belt, this is one of them, as is Mr. Miracle. Just keep him far away from the Bat family, please. Even though he throughout his awful run, he wrote a couple of good issues, including one of the best Bruce Clark, Selina, Lois pairings with the double date. But this idea, this kind of reintroduction of the kind of who Supergirl really is, I think is honestly a masterstroke for the character. I think this is, if you are a Supergirl fan, if you are interested in the character, this is one of the definitive books to read. With some characters, it gets hard to say, like, oh, what Batman story? Everyone's going to have a different Batman story.
Yeah.
There's a million of them. But with some of these characters who have less, like, big stories, and Supergirl does have several big stories, but, like...
Half of Supergirl's big stories are her dying or her not even being the real Supergirl.
Well, so I love the 90s Supergirl book, so like I'm a big fan of that. But this is, it would be hard to argue that this isn't a definitive Supergirl book. I would especially if anyone was looking for a Supergirl story to read. You have this, you have a Supergirl Adventures in the Eighth Grade, which is truly excellent. It's kind of got that kind of Star versus the Forces of Evil kind of vibe to it. Sure. It was a very, very great. I think Scotty Young did it. This is an excellent work that defines the character in a way that makes her, I don't want to say matter, but it distinguishes her from her cousin, and also makes a great case as to, this is why you need a Supergirl movie. You need the other side of that coin. You need and it's the same reason you need Batman and Superman together when they're not being directed by someone who doesn't understand the characters.
Yeah.
You need someone who is the other side of things. And I love that Superman's own cousin is on the other side of things.
But you mentioned the Batman Superman comparison, because Batman and Superman are as similar as they are different, for sure.
Yeah.
But with this take on Supergirl, you once again, and I know we've said this already, you have someone that is willing to do and believes in all of the things that truth, justice, all of that, that Superman believes in, but just has a different path to get to that point. And it's just, it's so beautiful, and it's so wonderful. And
I wish the book stopped there.
So we end this with a wonderful moment of Ruthie realizing what's going on, as we have Supergirl about to kill Krim herself, as she's talking about all of these things that they have talked about along the way, including repeating back to her a line that she said back in Maypole about it being so big and there being so small. And she is screaming at Supergirl, "No, I learned the lesson. I learned it. I learned it. I learned it." As you see the sword coming down. And then we flash forward to we don't get a resolution of that particular scene, because we go forward to an old woman sitting in a chair outside her home. Is this the portion of the story that you don't like, Miles?
Yes.
It's not that we...
I'll tell you what. So we have an old woman sitting on the porch. It's revealed it's Ruthie. And she even says that some of the stuff that she's told you may or may not be the actual truth of things. Which I like. Unreliable narrator. It's great. Supergirl comes to visit, looking by and large the same. So either these creatures age fast or Kryptonians live a long, long time. That's never been really defined for us.
Krypto's there too. She is wearing a different costume, Supergirl.
Because she does reveal that, yes, Krypto was always fine.
Yeah, which is like, she lied about Krypto being hurt in order to go on the quest.
Because, like, I'm siding with her being this kind of, like, angry, curmudgeon Supergirl for a bit. Because I'm like, yeah, they shot my dog, you know? But they have a little chit-chat. Also fine with that. And then we find out that Krem has been in the Phantom Zone for the equivalent of, I think, 300 years.
Yeah.
And
he spent the first 100 years raging and angry and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They spent the second 100 years feeling real sorry for himself for what he did. And he spent the third 100 years really trying to atone and make things better.
And then sentence served, pops him out. He is a bag of bones of an old man and asks Ruth if she'll forgive him. And then, and maybe I'm just misreading it, but then she kills him.
No, she doesn't. And you talk about the subtlety in Supergirl. What you have, and I've got the panel open, you see him in different positions in each panel as if she's just hit him in the head because he's like, ow. And I guess you could read it that he's dead on the ground.
Yeah, there. See, I read it that he was dead on the ground, and I was like, well, that just destroys what we just...
But the fact that in the second to last panel, you see Supergirl and Krypto walking away, and you see his hand on his head, like, ow.
Let me look. Will you put the panel up with the camera again? I can still see it. Okay. I missed that because it also looks like the freaking mountains.
Yeah. It's a very, very subtle thing.
In fact, that's a little too subtle.
it's also undercut by the fact that on the next, while all that's happening, the dialogue that's over these images is what was actually in Ruthie's book, which says that Supergirl killed Krem on the beach, which we know that didn't happen. That is just, you know, she said that she's an unreliable narrator in this, and that is the unreliable narrator bit of
which things. I liked. And knowing that, okay, now seeing that he didn't die, it's fine. I still wish it had just ended on the beach, personally. But
to me, what this says is that yes,
I dislike it a lot less.
Yeah, someone can change for the better, and it's honestly a mirror reflection of what she says she's going to do earlier in the book, where Krem is going to beg for forgiveness and repent his ways, and she's going to kill him anyway. But in this, she doesn't kill him because she's learned from Supergirl this entire story. But at the same time, just because she doesn't kill him, and just because he's pled for forgiveness and become a better person through his experiences in the Phantom Zone, doesn't mean that she has to forgive him. And that's, I think that's an important message too. Like,
I fully agree with that. Like I said, him not being dead is fine. That makes that scene work a lot better. It still feels kind of, I don't know. I like knowing that Krem wasn't murdered because I think that's really important to the story.
Yeah.
I don't know I just don't know how much I need that epilogue. Like, I also love that
it is a mirror of the first page of the book where you are seeing Krem kill Ruthie's father.
Yeah.
And it is clear that he is dead.
Yes. Or is he? I will say this is overall a very, very, very good book. Like I said before, it is certainly a book that if you are interested in the character of Supergirl, and especially if you want to know, if you want to have an idea of what the mindset is going into this upcoming Supergirl movie, which I love that they even have like the recent poster of the look up being scratched out with lookout.
Yeah, it's great. Because that's the thing. That's what they're going to do, is they're going to paint her as like the bad girl Supergirl, but we're going to learn through this movie that she is very much not, that she is just somebody carrying with her a lot of
There is definitely going to be more hangover type of humor in the movie than was in this book. And I'm personally curious, and I haven't seen a cast list, so you can probably tell me, because I'm sure you have, if they're going to switch out Krem with Lobo.
No, Krem of the Yellow Hills is cast as a guy named
cast?
Matthias Schoenaerts, who is, I don't know where he's from, somewhere in Europe. I want to say he's Flemish. He's Belgian. He was born in Belgium.
Okay, okay. I know that Supergirl has had stories recently that involve Lobo. I just I was like, yeah, it'd be way more fun.
I wonder how much Lobo's actually going to be in the movie.
Oh, I would imagine not much, or maybe at least in the, like, I think it's, he's even saying he's only supposed to make a cameo appearance. So I'm sure he's just going to be the equivalent of, like, maybe a Metamorpho type of situation.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen much of anything that the guy who plays Krem has been in. But I will say, I think Millie Alcock is perfectly suited to play this iteration. Like, I loved her in the cameo we got, but
spoilers.
I mean, there's a giant poster everywhere.
I know.
So shut up. I do think she is pretty perfectly suited for this role.
I can't wait. I watched House of the Dragon. That's the only thing I've seen her in. I know she's obviously done other work, but not a ton of other work.
Superman was her second movie, and that's an uncredited cameo.
Yeah. But she was so fantastic as young Rhaenyra in House of the Dragon that I cannot wait to see this and how she takes what is being presented with the look out poster and all of that stuff, and how she takes that and turns it on its head for, like, a really deep role. And Miles and I just looked this up before we started recording. I didn't realize who the director of this movie was, a guy named Craig Gillespie, who has done a number of notable works. Like, he directed Cruella for Disney and all of this stuff. But he's also got a ton of, like, weird indie films. Like, I, Tonya, which, was he nominated for that? I don't know if he was. I, Tonya's fantastic.
I don't think it was, no, it wasn't for Best Director. I think just actress and supporting.
Well, that movie's fantastic. Lars and the Real Girl, which is just a weird...
It's also a movie that doesn't age super great.
It's a weird movie with freaking Ryan Gosling as a whole thing, but he most recently one of his biggest things recently was the Dumb Money documentary about the GameStop stock thing that happened. But I
know him from directing the Fright Night remake, which I am I also saw Lars of the Rigol, but I love the Fright Night remake a lot.
I loved I, Tonya. I thought I, Tonya was fantastic.
Well, yeah, I, Tonya is like a Oscar-winning biopic. Fright Night is a vampire movie with Colin Farrell. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, I look
and at Anton Yelchin.
I look at this stuff and I just think, all right, we've got some very, very interesting picks. And wow, I was gonna say Otto Binder is credited as one of the writers on the film, but I think it's just he's written a lot of Supergirl comics, so they're just doing that thing where they credit the one of the principal creators. Miles, final thoughts, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow.
I mean, I've kind of laid it out. I really do like this one a lot. I don't know if I love it as much as you do, but I do think it's a phenomenal book. It's certainly a character-defining book for Kara. And yeah, if someone asked, hey, I want to read some Supergirl stuff, what should I read? You just hand them a copy of this and you're good to go.
This is 8 individual issues, but it has been long combined into one effectively graphic novel.
Yeah, it's a graphic novel, and I think they were prestige issues too. I don't think they were the typical like 22 pages.
That tracks.
If I'm not mistaken,
I didn't look. I didn't do any page counts for the issues, but
I didn't either. I'm just everything felt prestige. That book at least had cardboard stock when it was released.
Yeah. Oh god, the art is so good. I love it so much.
It is very good, and I don't know. I don't have anything else to really say. This is a definitive Supergirl book, and I really, really liked it a lot.
And I love the fact that they are basing the Supergirl that is going to be seen by millions and millions and millions of eyes all around the planet, that they're basing it off of this. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of cynical stuff and be like, okay, well, now we can have a real Supergirl and not just some gender palette swap. And I'm like, no. I will not have Melissa Benoist erasure for one.
Miles, I'm
surprised. And that character was so important.
I am surprised that you saw that, because the thing that I have seen is that people like the you know, a particular set of people super frustrated that Supergirl is not just a palette swap of Clark Kent. So.
Well, no. I've seen a lot of people kind of, you know, just being derogatory in celebration of the new Supergirl by like dunking on the prior version, or the prior popular version, I should say. No disrespect to Sasha Kelly. But when that version was coming out, it was so important for that version of Kara Danvers to be who she was when she was, especially during, I don't know, 2016, yeah. And you saw Melissa Benoist out in the streets with a sign that says, "This blank is made of steel."
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just like, no, you needed that.
Yeah.
And I am thankful for that. But I'm also thankful that, like, okay, cool. Now we have had that and it was needed then. We can have a different iteration of Supergirl now that is wholly different, but wholly makes sense for the character in consideration of the franchise mythology at large. And I think that is so interesting and so important to establish. And I was a little kind of like, huh, when I heard that Superman was immediately going to be followed up with Supergirl, because, you know, you want to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But having read this and knowing who they cast and having seen Superman, I'm like, this makes perfect sense. And I think people are going to kind of have whiplash by how different these stories are.
For sure.
And that's exactly what James Gunn wants, is he does not want any of these movies to feel the same, to be the same type of movie. He's been on kind of the warpath, kind of preaching that gospel recently. And I fully agree. Like, give us interesting films. And I think you have an opportunity to make an interesting film here.
And considering the cast, considering the source material, and considering the director's chops, I feel like this could be really, really something special. But to go back to Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, I adore this book. I think it has everything, and I'm so excited to see it getting attention, because it really is the definitive Supergirl story for people to see. So with that said, we're going to close the book on close the book on Super Summer. I don't know that we're going to have any other super related characters for the rest of the summer.
I mean, you never know.
You never know. That's true. But we are
especially when we read Superman Birthright next week.
We are going to now switch over when it comes to the next comic book catch up or comic catch up to talk about something on the other side of the big two. And that is... Well, wait, this says it came out in 2024. I thought this came out in like the year 2000, Miles.
Well, you see, there was another.
We're talking about 2024.
We didn't practice that, it shows.
Yeah, clearly. We are talking about 2024's relaunch of Ultimate Spider-Man, which in turn is part of the kickoff of the relaunch of the Ultimate Universe, which boy, howdy, if there was a Spider-Man that was aimed directly at me, this would be it. Millennial dad Spider-Man, let's go.
Yeah, I'm excited to like dig into this. I've been pretty curious about the new Marvel Ultimate Universe after they rebooted it and fully rebooted it. So it has no connection in terms of like, well, there is connections, but the books themselves are vastly different versions of the heroes that you know and love. Yeah. And I remember reading the first issue and being very, very pleasantly surprised. And I just haven't had a chance to read the rest of it. So what are we reading, the first six?
We're reading the first six. Now, I happen to mention that there's a bunch of comics that I'm still subscribed to that I have not read. And this is one of them. Because I'm so behind on comics, I subscribed to this book when it first came out. And I was reading it up to like to issue four. And then I lost my place. And so I had to reread it again. And I had to reread it again. So I will be rereading these first six issues again as we get into this, because this is a very different take on Peter Parker. And I know that's a weighted phrase to say with someone with as many different takes as Peter Parker has in both comics, TV shows, and movies with a whole Spider-Verse behind him. But, yeah, this is very, very interesting, and I can't wait to talk about it with you, because it's different. It's also an ongoing thing, so we're gonna have questions that are asked that we don't have answers to yet, which is always kind of fun. So with that said, gang, thank you for joining us. Next week, of course, Ultimate Spider-Man, the new one, issues 1-6. And if you'd like to find us, you can find us at themoreuniverse.com, where you can find this and every other issue of the show, every other episode of the show that we've done going back, good Lord, almost 14 years. Actually, it's been 14 years. Our show is 14 years old, Miles. I cannot freaking believe it. It's
pretty insane.
Yeah. You can go to Blue Sky at The More You Nerd. There's other social media networks that you can find us at The More You Nerd. And of course, you can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. And finally, check out CosmicCrit.com. Cosmic Crit is our other show that Miles and I and all of our friends play the tabletop RPG game Starfinder. It's like D&D in space, put out by Paizo. It's an awesome game. CosmicCrit.com. And if you go to the Cosmic Crit website, look in the upper right-hand corner, you can join the Cosmic Crit Discord. And that's where you can talk to me and Miles all day when we are bored. So with that said, gang, we're going to end the show here, as we always do, with a rousing nerd out.
New nerd for y'all.